I'm gonna have my men blow the piss out of those precious specimens of yours. And we're gonna get the hell out of here and leave you and your highfalutin asshole friends to rot in this stinking sewer. Is that food enough for you?
Where will you go, Captain? You can destroy my specimens, but what about the millions more that are waiting to greet you outside? Do you really think you can blow the piss out of them? All of them? They have you in a hopeless situation strategically. You're lost.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Flicks That Church Forgot. I'm Peter Laws, that's it. Almost forgot. And this is the next part of a review looking at George A. Romero's Day of the Dead from 1985. Now, the previous part explores fairly in-depth look at the film and some of its themes, but the film is so packed out with ideas that we're going to continue looking in this underground tomb of death. Cheery. And by the way, I'm writing this review while I sit here in IKEA restaurant watching ravenous people shuffling in the crowd to tear meatballs apart with their teeth. Seems sort of fitting, really, to be here. Now, I actually met George Romero, which for a geek like me was sort of fantastic. We shook hands, and I remember at the time thinking, well, afterwards at least, thinking, oh my word, I just shook the hand that held the camera on Creepshow, the hands that wrote the script for Martin. I mean, yeah, I know, it's a bit sad. Anyway, I got the obligatory goofy smiling picture with him, and we chatted a bit about John Harrison's music, and I remember telling him that I was a church minister, and he replied by saying, wow, man, that's wild. One of my favorite reactions to my vocation. He signed my Blu-ray of Dawn of the Dead with his obligatory Stay Scared, which I think he writes on all his photographs. It was great to meet him. It really was. But anyway, I said in the last episode about how much I like Romero because he packs so much thought into his films, and Day of the Dead's no exception. In fact, the more I think about it, the more rich with themes and ideas this film becomes. Now, maybe not all the themes are intentional, and maybe I am reading things in that he never put in there consciously. But I'm cool with that. I think that's the nature of art, in my opinion, that it has multiple interpretations that in some sense can become valid even if the original makers never intended it that way. It doesn't mean that we can't find and discover new things within stories and films and books we might explore. What I like about Romero is that he's a thinky type of guy. Day of the Dead was criticized because it was described as being way too talky. And indeed, after the action-packed shenanigans of Dawn of the Dead, I suppose I can see why some audiences figured this follow-up was too cerebral, too plodding. Indeed, the pace, I suppose, is pretty slow, and you can't get away from the fact that there's a lot of the movie taken up with people shouting loudly at each other and swearing a lot. I always thought Day of the Dead would be an extremely challenging movie for a censor of the TV channels if they had to be the beep, beep, beep sort of button going through it. But while the slow, talky aspects of it had switched many off from it, it's ironically exactly that which draws me to it. This film is like a melodrama, like a sort of chamber piece, and in many ways it's about ideas. It's almost like Cronenbergian in that way. Day of the Dead deals in abstract concepts for much of its running time, and mainstream audiences don't always like that, but I'm just saying I do. I did a degree in sociology, I guess. I'm just wired that way, and that might help explain why I find Romero such an interesting filmmaker, but also how I managed to waffle on thematically about films in ways that maybe are a little bit weird. Anyway, he often is described as a political or sociological in his filmmaking, and Dawn of the Dead is always the one that crops up as a sort of like, this is an example of his commentary and consumerist angle. But as I argued in the last episode, Day of the Dead actually, I think, explores more complex and tricky social themes than Dawn of the Dead, even though I adore Dawn of the Dead. But the themes of science versus military versus retreatist responses in a world of apocalypse is a bit harder to put your head around than, we like shopping. But it's still, it actually brings about some much more nuanced sort of interpretations and reflections on the film. And while Dawn of the Dead, the theme may well be capitalism, consumerism, and money, just see the Hell's Angels and indeed the protagonists themselves delighting in getting their hands on all the free stuff at the mall, in Day of the Dead, money has largely become useless. So much so that Romero has notes of it and bills simply blowing across the floor with all the other rubbish in the opening sequence. I mean, the characters are in this bunker filled with stuff from the outside world. I mean, there's entire TV shows aren't there at the moment, like Storage Wars and stuff, where people are just super excited about seeing the different things that they've got in these boxes. But in this world, hardly anybody cares less about what is stored there. Except maybe Flyboy and McDermott, and even them, it's just for vain passing the time because they realize that it's all pretty useless symbols of yesterday. The old world order has gone by the third film, and humanity is just trying to work out what the heck they're going to do to replace it. Now, I mentioned in a previous episode that the character Sarah is particularly strong, but let's just analyze that a little bit more. This is, of course, a time when this film came out, the mid-1980s, when female characters were becoming a little bit more tough and self-sufficient in films. Sigourney Weaver, I guess, in Aliens is perhaps the most prominent and oft-cited example of that. Though I think it's worth pointing out that Aliens came out a year after Day of the Dead, so that's worth considering. But while I love the first Alien film, and I do like Aliens, for me, Sarah in Day of the Dead is a far more interesting heroine. Because she shows incredible toughness, but that's not at the expense of her more classical feminine attributes. What I mean is, like, you know, she ends up being the main voice for community cohesion, for example. That's often a thing that, you know, you read about in, like, sort of, you know, gender attributes that maybe females can be a little bit more attuned to the importance of community and relationship. Now, I realize, like, you can speak in complete stereotypes here, and there's obviously exceptions, but what's interesting is, you know, she is still that. She still has that sense of, you know, can we just get together. But she's also, like, tough as nails. In fact, I read that Cardell would sometimes play her character a little softer or more sympathetic or emotional, and Romero would say, no, keep it cool and hard as much as you could. The clearest example of this really interesting balance that you see in her is when we discover that Miguel, the nervous Hispanic soldier, is her boyfriend. And at one point in the movie, she's forced to deal with a zombie bite on Miguel's arm, and the way she deals with it is a fantastic insight into her character. And she's straight to it. She's grabbing a machete and she's hacking his arm clean off. She gets a burning torch and cauterizes the wound, all with a strong and straightforward precision. But then she negotiates with the military men to not shoot him in the head. But while Ripley from Aliens might have just thrown out some hard-ass lines to the camera, typical of a Schwarzenegger or a Stallone movie of the 1980s, Sarah does something else. After this action sequence, which isn't, like, feminine or masculine, it's just human, she sort of goes into shock. She crumbles into this shuddering weeping which you suspect might even be the first time she's truly let the stress of this horrendous situation break her down. And I just think kudos to Romero for making a strong female character who doesn't just become like a male machine of power like the action movies of the 1980s, because that in itself is a preposterous parody of maleness. She is super tough, but she's genuinely vulnerable and therefore completely believable. For my money, it's much more interesting and authentic female role model than Lara Croft, for example. And like, it really, it reminds us that each one of us, male and female, we might have different sort of ways about us. We do have differences, but really we're just both human beings that are all on a spectrum. What makes it even more emotionally intense is that we have already had plenty of hints that Sarah is the only woman on the base, and she is becoming, and is indeed has become, the object of lust for many of these soldiers, and no doubt her fellow scientists too. You know, give us a chance of loving, I think, says Rhodes while he's sort of staring her up and down. And so we get this sense that she has an entirely unique problem to deal with alongside all the others. That's of her being a potential rape victim. You know, when you think about it, that's a pretty disturbing possibility, or probability, I should say, in a world of social collapse. Experts say, don't they, that, you know, where civilization is 9 meals away from anarchy. When families and households have to go without meals after the 9th empty plate, people start attacking each other and killing to keep their kids alive. And the world of chaos, in a sense, is very close behind the door. And one of the horrible facts of that is that most of us currently live in a society in which sexual violence is rightly condemned. But it's worrying and disturbing to think how quickly that could change, how people would exercise their sexual desires in a world where the law did not exist. And of course, men would be vulnerable to this too, you know, I don't think it's sexist to admit that it would probably be women who would suffer the brunt in an unpoliced society. I find this an interesting idea with regards to my religion because being a Christian, I feel like there's always this moral law that I would have to still obey even in a world that didn't have any state law. And many others would agree, by the way, including atheists. They might have this sense of morality and then they don't. I'm not suggesting if an atheist found themselves in a zombie apocalypse, you know, they'd punch the air and rejoice at the opportunity to turn into a demented, selfish rapist. that's not what I'm saying. Absolutely not. And I hope you hear that. What I'm saying is, though, I'm interested in the idea of where these rules and morals come from. And I've mentioned this before in this podcast. In the film Day of the Dead, Logan at one point talks about how really morality only exists when it's rewarded. Hence, he feeds the zombie human flesh to train them not to eat him. And so for him and his philosophy, and he shares it at one point, he recognizes morality is not inherent in ourselves, but we just do it to get something nice. And he might be right. But for me, I guess all I'm saying is, my idea is that, you know, I reckon morality is somehow written on our DNA sometimes, that maybe deep down we know what's right and what's wrong. However, the real test of those theories would be in an apocalyptic no law, no government world. And that's the world that Day of the Dead posits. It's a very real and frightening idea that a world without law could become a terrifying and brutal place for everybody, but especially for a woman. What's very telling is that while I sit here in the United Kingdom, you know, there is law and order, which is sometimes broken, but on the whole, it's there. But right now in the world, there are places where law and order are not there, where it's broken down, maybe in a war situation or social upheaval. And there may well be people, even as I speak, experiencing hideous atrocities. I guess it's just it's a reminder how close we are to that, and also the reminder that that stuff actually goes on, and I want to be as someone who doesn't forget that and who cares about that. So the character of Sarah is even more inspiring and to be respected in a sense, because she has to manage to survive and handle herself, yes, in this terrible apocalyptic setting, but she's had to be locked in a hole with these, you know, randy guys. Not to mention the expectation of her to become the baby machine for the future. It's a thought I had at the end of this film. Well, you know, we say it's this happy ending, perhaps, but, you know, does that mean, is she simply now going to have to forget all previous ideas of courtship and love, and she becomes the biological photocopier? You know, make more and more people to populate the world. Get some babies! As a man in an apocalyptic end world scenario, I wouldn't really have that pressure. But my wife, my daughter, they would. That's a pretty chilling idea. All this, of course, is only made possible by the actress playing Sarah. That's Laurie Cardell, who I think she puts in a fantastic performance. And that moment when she breaks down, I found heartbreaking, and it just feels so realistic. And particularly because Romero made her hold back from too much emotion for the rest of the film, it's perfect. It reminds me, oddly enough, of if you've seen Shadowlands with about C.S. Lewis, with Anthony Hopkins, and he plays C.S. Lewis and he loses his wife and he sort of keeps it together for the whole thing. And then there's just one like just awful moment when he sits there and he just breaks down in tears. And because you just feel it's all pouring out of him at the one time, it's powerful. And that's what happens with Sarah in this. Now, the variety of zombies is also something that's interesting, and this is a consistent feature of Romero's zombie movies. It's like he must have sat on a busy street one day and made a note of the sheer variety of people he sees walking round. And so, therefore, to reflect that, he makes a zombie version of them, so we get zombie clowns, zombie businessmen, baseball kids, nuns, women in wedding dresses, all of life is here. And seeing them all shuffle around like bits of meat is scary on one hand, but on the other hand, the fact that he personalizes them reminds us of the horrendous tragedy going on in this film, or these films in general. I think in zombie movies, I often tend to think of it as sort of being an exciting world in which to live. I know, call me weird, but when I drive past big retail parks or industrial buildings in my car, the thought crosses my random mind. I think, wow, if the zombie apocalypse was actually happening, I'd maybe try and hide up there. That would be a cool place to hide. and it becomes a sort of game. But this is terrible, terrible horror at the heart of zombie movies that is often forgotten. The attention is always on the survivors, and just out there, there are these mindless monsters coming to get the good guys. But the tragedy is that most of these shuffling corpses out there were good guys too at one point. Now they have the virus in them and they have been stripped down to utterly one dimension. When you see the different outfits and professions of these ghouls, it becomes a parable, I think, of how I sometimes view the other people in general in the world. Let me explain. Do you ever sort of just look at other people in your life as bit players in a story? You know, like the people you pass on the street are just background characters who don't really have, you don't have affection for because you don't know them. And that's understandable. But if we think that way, and it's easy to think that, and to be honest, it's impossible not to think that way. You couldn't care about everybody in the same way as you care about your wife or your daughter, for example, because you couldn't make it through the day. There's too much awful stuff going on. But a result of this survival technique of us focusing on our, say, nuclear family, is that everyone else becomes in this sort of one dimension. We don't think of them beyond them being figures in a diorama of our mourning. But sometimes, maybe it's important to be reminded, like Day of the Dead reminded me, that actually the people around us are amazing. You know, this reminds me of something that happened to me a few days ago. I was looking for somewhere to do some writing, and I sometimes go away for a night or two to some sort of conference hotel, but my usual place was booked. And so I managed to find this retreat center, which is not that far away from me, which has a library. And I booked a stay and I went for two nights. But when I arrived, I discovered that this was technically a monastery, in the sense that I was staying with some Anglican monks who had followed the monastic life, and they were part of something called the Order of Sacred Mission. Now, they were great, they were a really nice bunch and a good laugh, actually. On the first night, they invited me round to the fireside to drink beer and wine, and we discussed vampires by firelight. It was quite a memorable moment. But one of them was sharing with me the ethos of this religious order. Now, these aren't monks who stay in silence or indeed stay in their rooms or cells. They still go out and meet other people and help them. But then they also do take homeless people in and support vulnerable, forgotten people. And anyway, one of them who was interestingly enough, he knew a fair amount about Bram Stoker and vampire legends, and he said about what he felt God was really calling human beings to do, and that we're not supposed to be just splitting hair over doctrine, because that way lies division and hatred, but that our fundamental purpose is to see the goodness in others and to love them and to see others and ourselves as fully alive, to care for the people that come our way. Thinking about Romero's zombies now, you know, here in IKEA restaurant, I sort of think of that idea. There's a bunch of people around me right now. I don't know their names. I don't know their fears or their favorite movies. I can't remember the guy who, you know, served me the cup of tea and the meatballs and fries that I had before. I can't remember that. I have no idea if they've seen a George Romero movie. Maybe they haven't. Maybe they have and they love them as much, or if not more, than I do. My point is, I often move through my life not particularly paying attention to the bit players in the background. Like in these films, these zombie films, we have Hare Krishna zombie, American football zombie, Red Indian YMCA zombie. You know what I mean? They're just like these stereotypes and meat in the grinder for the main characters. And that's fine, it's understandable. But until something like Day of the Dead comes along and says, oh, here's one of them, and he's called Bub, and you know, maybe we have something to learn from him. Maybe there's something to appreciate in him. Maybe he's more than one dimension. Indeed, in Day of the Dead, the human survivors are very quick to even paint each other in one dimension. The soldiers in particular frequently refer to people with racist terms like spick or jungle bunny. Even the fellow survivors are just one-dimensional bit players in their own survival narrative. Not much more significant, in a sense, than zombies themselves. I think what this monk was saying to me was that maybe I ought to be careful not to turn the people around me into bit-playing zombies in my life, and where I am the star. And really, it was when he told me about this famous Catholic writer called Thomas Merton, who was also a Trappist monk, and he wrote prolifically and died at a fairly young age, 58 or something, when he was electrocuted after getting out of a shower and touching an electric fan. And he was this really prolific writer, apparently, and I don't know a lot about him. I'm starting to read about him now. But he wrote once about sitting in a shopping center seeing others and him realizing that while he had been living the life of a solitary monk, not really seeing all of these people, this sort of general public all the time, he described a moment when he was out there with them and he was with others, his eyes were sort of opened to their value. that in some senses they weren't strangers at all. And I'm going to read you something that he wrote, and it was something that actually one of the monks gave me on the last day, and I think it just really ties in, oddly enough, with my thoughts on Day of the Dead this week. He wrote this, Merton wrote this in Thoughts in Solitude. In Louisville, at the corner of 4th and Walnut in the center of the shopping center, I was suddenly overwhelmed with the realization that I loved all those people, that they were mine and I theirs, that we could not be alien to one another even though we were total strangers. It was like waking from a dream of separateness, of spurious self-isolation in a special world, the world of renunciation and supposed holiness. The sense of liberation from an illusory difference was such a relief and such a joy to me that I almost laughed out loud. I have the immense joy of being man, a member of a race in which God himself became incarnate. As if the sorrows and the stupidities of the human condition could overwhelm me, now I realize what we all are. And if only everybody could realize this. But it cannot be explained. There is no way of telling people that they are all walking around, shining like the sun. And it was as if I suddenly saw the secret beauty of their hearts, the depths of their hearts, where neither sin nor desire nor self-knowledge can reach, the core of their reality, the person that each one is in God's eyes. If only they could see themselves as they really are. If only we could see each other that way all the time. There's a great line in Dawn of the Dead when the black hero Peter, played by Ken Foree, is a SWAT officer. He sees all these zombies coming and he says, "They're us." And in some weird way, maybe Thomas Merton was saying the same thing. All these supposed bit players or irrelevant people wandering around us every day, the countless people on TV or the news who we might write off or ignore, they're actually more connected to who we are than we might think. And maybe it's worth slowing down sometimes, like Romero forces us to do in this film, and particularly with Bub, and seeing that even those people who are very unlike us have something wonderful inside them. So as we head for the elevator out into the sun, let me just say this. Day of the Dead, alongside Night of the Living Dead, Dawn of the Dead, Martin, Creepshow, Season of the Witch, and some others, is another example of how George Romero has something to say through horror. And while I am as happy as the next guy to watch a film where a zombie simply chases a bunch of people, it's the horror movies that stimulate my brain and not just eat it, that just tend to wind up in some special little place in my troll heart. And if you were to flick down there right now, you'd find a whole bunch of horror films, but filed under D, if you could pick through the gore and the grue, would be Dawn and Day of the Dead. Well, that's it for another episode of the Flicks the Church Forgot. Follow me on Twitter at RevPeterLaws, or you can contact me at contactus@theflicksthechurchforgot.com. Until next time, though. Let me just mention, in the next couple of weeks, I'm going to be doing something quite interesting. My wife and I are going to Transylvania. Oh, yes. We're going for 5 days to experience Dracula country. And we're going to be exploring Bran Castle, and we're going to be going up into the Carpathian Mountains. And staying up there as well in a hotel made of ice, and creeping around and looking into Vlad the Impaler and the vampire legends and stuff, and just sort of kicking back. So really looking forward to that. So when I speak to you next time, I probably would have been there already. If you don't hear from me though ever again, I guess try and find me up in the Carpathian Mountains. I'll probably be lying there surrounded by wolves, and maybe had been turned into the undead. But hopefully, I'll come back for the next episode. So until then, don't forget, the Flicks the Church Forgot.